And you're very welcome back to the programme this Friday morning. Good morning if you have just switched on. Interesting couple of hours to come. Shortly, we'll be joined by Seamus Gunn to run through your legal questions, a general chit-chat too about something pertaining to law or governance or something along those lines. And also after 11, we have Marie Rush and Michael Leddy in with That's Entertainment. Fionnuala will be back next Friday. She just concludes her annual leave today. When the Oireachtas is finished, says a listener, auditing RTE, they should have enough experience to start exposing their own squandering of taxpayers' money. And I think the camcorder made some reference to that. If I didn't read the article, but I just glanced at the headline. Another, if you feel that you have been discriminated by a school as a father in its provision of information to you about your non-custodial child, it's making a complaint to the Workplace Relations Commission the best way to ensure that they'll undertake a fair and equal treatment of your child. That's a legal question, I think, that slipped in. So I'll put that to one side. The only thing RTE are hurt or worried about is their pockets now, but the dust will settle and it's back to business again. And that was really why I was trying to ask the question of what does the future of RTE look like? Because I don't think the public are prepared to accept that. And I think the public now are becoming more organised, more vocal, and aren't going to accept things like that any longer, I think. Anyway, I could be wrong. The public concern on the issue of mass immigration is too great to ignore. The government must consult the people by way of a referendum. Greg, the RTE scandal is only a drop in the ocean with regard to money. What's people going to say when their bird gets out of the GEA cage? Another, Paddy Rooney had an insight to spending in the HSE. Does he think there are questions to be answered there? Well, he's referenced spending and budget increases to the hospital and how that money ends up getting spent in the past. So I'm sure he wouldn't be left wanting in terms of commenting on that. I know four people who have cancelled their payments for their licence. I'm a pensioner, so don't have to pay. That's interesting, actually, to get a sense of that. Another, too much Oireachtas time taken up with the RTE debacle. What a pity there was not as much time taken up with the sitting and cost of the Children's Hospital. Another, I'd like to ask why we are still talking about 100% when everyone has left the table. Surely the Micro Action Group and others who are a lot smarter than me knew what was going to be in this scheme. If they had doubts, which they did, then the first doubt, when the first deadline after the Dublin protest wasn't met, then we all should have went back again. Once again, we've more time wasted, time we don't have. Well, listen, it's a campaign of individuals. I'm not speaking on their behalf. I can only presume to know that their role, the campaigner's role, was to get the best deal absolutely possible. It was never up to them to accept it and say, yes, that's a great deal. It was then up to the people to say, does this go far enough? What do you want to do next? Do you know, they're not appointed as such. As I say, they're a group of concerned homeowners and individuals trying to campaign to get the best scheme possible. I think it's up to the general public and those affected to accept whether or not what the government came back with goes far enough. Fair play to women, Sinead, sorry. She's spot on with her comments about Ryan Tuberty. He and his agent are pulling a fast one. Again, license should not be paid. And who cares what Leo says a listener. Good morning, Greg. Will you remind Padraig that we live in a constitutional republic, not a democracy? Two totally different things. That's what's wrong with our politicians. They talk democracy and fool the people, but we don't live in one. Him being a Republican, I thought he would have known that. Listening to your panel, says another listener, talking of a parallel government and how they are to blame for everything. And I've heard such a cop-out. If that's the case, why would we even bother to vote anymore? Well, many people don't. Just over half of people do. And maybe it's for that exact reason why 40-odd percent don't even hire in local elections. You know, people are switched on to what's going on and they make their choice. Poland and Denmark have announced plans to hold a referendum on the EU migrant deal. I really don't understand how we can't have a referendum on mass immigration. Another, when will we see the rot and corruption in RTE? Imagine what's going on in the civil service, HSE, etc. Another, why is Joe McHugh not on here and standing up for Micah families? He has gone into hiding too. We invited him on. He wasn't available or didn't want to. I'm not sure exactly what his response was. Joe McHugh, we invited him on? He didn't respond. Okay, we didn't have a response from Joe McHugh inviting him on to the programme. Good morning, Greg. The people of Donegal went to Dublin, and what did they do? Nothing. It was like a peace and love march. The government knew then that they would give the people of Donegal anything, and the traffic in Dublin will still keep moving. Donegal had their chance and blew it being nice. They forgot this government isn't nice and despise them. But text me back in and say what you believe should have been done differently, because there is a balance to be struck. Even if a group of individuals, 20,000 out of a population of 6 million, they bring the capital to a standstill, well, that ends up being used to sort of make them seem unreasonable, to sort of swing public attitudes in the favour of those that make the decisions. You know, simply shutting down a city or something like that then does not necessarily bring the results. You know, you can't necessarily drag people to the table. I don't think, have we really tested it here? Question for your panel. Will they arrange a street protest if the triple lock of our neutrality is removed? Please direct that to Sinn Féin. That comes in from Benny. Listen, we'll be talking about that whole situation again, and I'll remember your question to put that too. I hope Marty Morrissey wasn't driving his car with flip-flops on. You wouldn't be insured there. Okay, right. Well, I get you. I get you. I see what you did there. Last couple before we take a break for the bingo numbers and welcome Seamus onto the programme. When the Oireachtas is finished auditing... Oh, no, I've already read that one. Where are the ones that... Oh, well, I wanted to do requests. That's right. I wanted to do requests. This caller says, I want to wish Sean Doherty all the best as he got into the priesthood. He was a brilliant broadcaster. I was on with him a couple of times and thought he was just brilliant. He would be a very sincere and helpful priest. That's from James Hargerman. In Ballybuffet. Naomi and Simon, they're getting married at Ards Friary today. Wishing them a great day from Francis, Jennifer and family. Breedley, okay. Well done to you, Naomi and Simon. Have a lovely day, will you? Sadie Doherty, a patient in the Lake House Nursing Home in Port Na Blah, celebrating her 105th birthday today. Happy birthday, Sadie. All the very best and hope to see you later. That comes in from Mae McFadden and her family in Rye, Rathmullen, Letterkenny, and not forgetting the crew in Canada. And we all here too, Sadie. If you're listening at the Lake House Nursing Home in Port Na Blah, we wish you a lovely 105th birthday today, and I'm sure you're going to be treated like the queen and the lady that you are. I'd like to wish our son Tiernan a happy first birthday from all the gang in Cornwall, mommy, daddy's brother Dahi and sister Blathine Rose. Okay, happy birthday to you, wee Tiernan. Hopefully a Highland Radio 9 till noon show listener. Get him his ear nice and close to the radio. We want to start them young. He's one today, hopefully. Maybe by about 3 or 4 regularly listening. Martin and Jackie Ferry in Falkara getting married today from mum, dad and family. Martin and Jackie, have a lovely day, will you? Hi, could you please wish Andrea Gardner from Remelton a very happy birthday? This coming in from her sister, Sinead. Brian, Keenan, Evan, and Sophia. Have a lovely day, all of you. And we'll read out more requests, by the way, if you want to send on good wishes to anyone. We're more than happy to do that. I want to wish Kira Grant from Letterkenny and Amber Barrett from Milford with the Ireland team heading to the World Cup today to play for Ireland. Okay, want to wish them... we're so proud of you is what they're saying. That's from all in Letterkenny. Kira Grant and Amber Barrett. That game last night, it was a... I mean, I don't know how much we learnt from that game. Not much really at all. I think really... both teams would be fearful of injury. It was almost like a kick around. I'm not saying the commitment wasn't there, but it doesn't really tell us much about how we shall fare out in Australia. That game against Australia, that's going to be an all or nothing kind of, and it's not all or nothing, but you know what I mean? We're going to see a very different level of performance from the Irish team, but also from Australia. That's all to look forward to later this month. All right. I want to wish a good morning to Vanessa, Dean, Cheryl, Siobhan, Kieran, Bitsy and us there as well, all of you who are watching the programme, and I use that as a reminder to let you know that you can watch the show today and every day on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, across our Facebook pages and on our website, and you'll be able to clap eyes on me and Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Company, Letterkenny and Remelton. A very good morning to you, Seamus. Thank you so much for your time today.
Morning, Greg. Nice to be here.
Good to have you on board. Before we get into people's questions, and just to remind people, the lines are still open. We'll try and get through as many as we can. If not today, we certainly might into the future. I suppose the RTE story, this case is well rehearsed, but just interested in your views in relation to how we got here, governance of such an organisation. Yeah. What's your take on that in that area?
It's Well, the word corporate governance, I suppose, has never been to the fore like it has been for the last 2 weeks. I mean, everybody is getting well versed in it, and people have been exercised, obviously, by it, because this is our national broadcaster, and it's an organization in which the whole country has bought into. And not only in terms of their allegiance to it, but also in financial terms, because we pay license fees. And that, coupled with the marriage between the private and the public, where the license fee is a part contributor to the, obviously, the funding, the massive funding required to run RTE, and then the commercial side of it, which has to generate an income, and on which you rely heavily on big names. And that's just commercial reality. And most people in the commercial line will certainly understand that. And I've heard people who have worked in it come out and said that in many ways, like the highlighting of this barter account, et cetera, there's nothing new in any of that. What is new, or where the light and the torch is really being shone, is the method of the operation and the practices and the processes which under which the actual RTE itself was governed, if governed properly.
Well, can I just, before you go on...
I think this is just important, because it's something that I think that I don't think has been properly put out there. The tier under which... first of all, the government, who are now looking into this with great gusto, the government are responsible, Greg, for appointing the RTE board. The board then below them is the executive board, which is the board of management. And up to very recently, we had Dee Forbes at the helm of that, and obviously she has resigned now. So, and they were responsible then for the day-to-day management. But the board itself, which is appointed by the government, are there to hold them to account. Now, while I know the story has run in a direction of the main presenter, and even more lately last night, another one just coming into the side of it, there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of attention being directed to, well, what about the board that were appointed by the government to hold the executive board to account? It just seems to have been somewhat, to me, glossed over. While that board had been brought in and questioned, they were basically putting it saying, well, the executive board and the management, and they're saying that there was a complete lack of corporate governance. But the point I make is this: it was their responsibility to see that there was proper corporate governance and to oversee the executive board and the way in which they were carrying out their duties and their responsibilities. That seems to be slightly lacking.
Yeah, but their response to that is, and firstly, the initial 2 points you made about big people bring in big money, I don't think that is generally accepted, to be honest with you. And I think barter accounts, whilst they might exist, I think how this particular one was operated is certainly worthy of the scrutiny. But to your comment about the board are offering a defence of ignorance. They are saying that we asked the questions, the certain things weren't in on the books, they weren't accounted for, payments withheld from us, and it was us that created a system for this audit that discovered all of this. So in fact, it is the board working that has exposed all of this. That is the argument they're making, that this stuff was concealed from them, but they set up an auditing system that discovered it to expose the executives' wrongdoing. That's their position. You don't buy that then?
Well, I find that difficult to reconcile for one startling fact which has come out, that this has been going on since 2017, which is 5 years. Now, I could maybe hold with you on 1 year. I might even extend it to two. But when I get to five, I then start wondering, well, you know, how come it wasn't brought to light earlier? If that was the modus operandi since 2017, we get to 2022. And even this year, in or around March now, we're coming into sort of second week in July. It is now coming to the fore after Ryan Tuberty has resigned from his Late Show gig. So I just find it peculiar that the board should have made themselves better informed during that period so that it could have been dealt with earlier. And also the point that arises is that, well, Why does it? Why has it now to be brought into the domain in which it is, when you know they could have, if they were doing their job and discharging their responsibilities as far back as 2017, this matter could have been dealt with, perhaps even in a different manner. Mm. That would have been better for RTE in general, RTE corporate.
I can't believe I'm here playing devil's advocate defending the board of the RTE, but it's a position I find myself in. They have a turnover of €344 million split between commercial income and license revenue. The money we're talking about as it relates to Ryan Tubridy is 120,000 of payments and three payments of €75,000. When you look at the overall running of this organisation, as I say, with a total income of €344 million, it would have to be a very, very pernickety board to weed out such a small percentage, inappropriate use of such a tiny, tiny percentage of finances, no?
Yes, yes. And therefore, it comes back to nearly supporting my argument. Well, why are we so exercised by this now? Why is it 2 weeks wall to wall on all media and all shows and nothing else to talk about in this country, if that's the type of minutiae that we're dealing with? We've now got into headlines about somebody who had a car for a few years. I mean, does that merit that attention? I would agree with you on that side of it, that it is a small amount, but I do not agree that it is not the board's duty to be overseeing and to be holding the executive board to account and to be noticing what is going on in relation to the accounts. What is fascinating is that if this the accountancy procedures, that it was able to be kept out of the loop for five odd years as well, and that it now just comes in. I also find it probably a little uneasy about the method, and this will probably be delved into next week when you have Noel Kelly and Ryan Tubridy appearing, is the circuitous route in which the 150,000 was actually paid. And that hasn't been really teased out as yet at all, I don't believe. But if you get into the nitty-gritty of that, you will see where it will raise a number of questions. There was a massive amount of intermediary fees attached to it. The 150 converted to somewhere around 230 odd thousand by the time they paid the intermediaries. It was raised, as I said, for consultancy services through a CMS marketing company. And then it was dispatched over to people in England, Astos, with whom the board, it is reported, the broadcaster, had a barter relationship where services were exchanged and traded, etc. And they were the people to settle the account. It came through that, and then it came back into Ireland and obviously passed on to, or likely to be then passed on to Mr. Tubridy. So that's a very circuitous type of exercise. And that hasn't really exercised many people's minds either as of yet. But yeah. I think that
seem to be more interested in what Martin Morrissey's tax liability might be than RTE's, and also to the secrecy around the multi-million euro payouts that RTE is likely have to make to revenue because of these employment contracts. But let me put it to you
that will all follow. But then let's just put it, just throw this into the mix. Is it fair though that these people who are, you know, in the public eye on a daily basis, is it fair that they are being scrutinised in this manner and being brought in before?
Because to some point they are public servants.
Yeah, but
public. You take public money, and you work under this umbrella of public service broadcasting, and with that there comes a great deal of arrogance, some might say, and importance and self-importance. You can't then all of a sudden look for some sort of a different defence when stuff starts hitting the fan. You know what I mean?
These people had very
lavish lifestyles. Money was no object, and people clearly weren't doing their jobs. And there certainly was quite a bit of moral corruption going on here. So,
I don't know about that. I think that that's taken a very high stand on it.
Let me explain it. If you do an interview, Seamus, right, and you say, I'm taking a 15% pay cut because all my colleagues are paying a 15% pay cut. You're on $500,000 a year. They're on €33,000 per year. They're on pandemic unemployment payments. And all while that's happening, you do a deal under the table to ensure that you actually don't take a 15% pay cut, that in fact your wages increase from 2019 to 2022. If that doesn't question, if there's no moral question there, well, I would give up altogether, because you're publicly stating you're standing with people taking a 15% pay cut, but in fact, you haven't taken that pay cut, and in fact, your wages have increased, and in fact, you get a guarantee from RTE that they will not come back to you looking to reduce your wages any further. So regardless of what happens across the corporation or the organisation, where underpaid staff could end up being asked to take a further cut or face redundancy, you have this golden ticket in your hand where part of your deal, you got a guarantee that you will not have to take any further pay reductions. If that does not drift into the area of morally wrong, well, I would struggle to put something in that area in its place.
Well, yeah, it's a big statement, and it's one that's been out there all week. Next week, you're going to have the opportunity maybe of seeing what the reaction is to that by Ryan Tuberty and Noel Kelly.
I'm suspecting,
in the interest of fair play, that Ryan Tuberty will say, well, I'm an individual. It's protected under the Constitution. I have my rights. I can negotiate. I can make a deal. And if I have a contractual deal with you, I'm obligated to fulfil it. And so too are you. And on that basis,
and I'll put
forward.
It to you, right? So, I'll be a member of the committee.
Parking your morals for a second and looking at the contractual situation is what I would be more interested in, is that he's quite entitled to negotiate on the best terms possible, to work out the best deal possible
for himself,
the RTE.
And you're Ryan Tuberty.
And their obligation is, now, if they have gone beyond the remit in discharging their obligation to the people of Ireland and to the board and to the director of corporate enforcement by going about it in a wrongful manner to some degree, and certainly not in a straightforward manner, well, then they will be held to account. But the person who makes the arrangement or has the contract is entitled to the benefit of. That would be what I would say. Park in your morals. And I can't disagree with the moral side of it. But I mean, I'm just looking at it from a simple contract and the individual's rights to negotiate and to see that his terms are then fulfilled. And that's protected under the law, and hopefully it will remain so.
Okay, I just think Dee Forbes is going to get an awful lot of blame next week. And if I was on the committee, I would say that's fine and you're perfectly entitled to do that. But why then did you, when the money wasn't there, clearly, that it couldn't be shown to be reflected on publicly available statements, then why were you so insistent that you decided to enter an agreement whereby these payments were actually hidden?
Well, that question might be the subject of some type of statutory inquiry or tribunal going forward, and that will go on for many years, and it will then disappear into the ether like an awful lot of other tribunals and findings.
What have we been talking about for 10 minutes then, Seamus? Okay. Seamus is going to be answering your questions after these. All right. You know, I mean, this will eventually die down, and it's a difficult one in a different media organisation. It's probably easier in RT to talk about it, but in a different media organisation, it feels like, and I don't want to feel like that, that you're piling on individuals or an organisation. It's not really what it's about, but this is, if I go into someone's kitchen and sit down, the first question they want to talk about is, or the first conversation that comes up is this, or after the weather. So we've a lot of messages along the same lines, Seamus. I don't know really legally what the situation is here, but this is one that's typical of many we have. I feel like not paying my TV license now because of this controversy. What can happen if I refuse to pay it? As I say, I mean, we can't give people workarounds, I don't think, but a lot of people out there asking the same question.
Well, I think that this is something that will be raising its head. I think it was reported again in the media this week, and it was mooted, this type of approach. Would I agree with it? Probably I can't agree with it because it is illegal. But there is going to be that people, I believe, resiling from making this payment and maybe then teasing it out. What can happen? Well, they can be prosecuted and taken to court and fined. That's what can happen. But if they want to contest that, which again is their right, they could go into court and make certain arguments. But it would come down to what I think will be a net point, not the content of RTE or not how they're run, how the corporate side or the corporate governance is run, managed or otherwise. It will come down to them providing the service for which the fee is set. Although all other points will be taken into consideration, I think that the result may very well be the same. But I do understand the reaction what is going to be the consequence of this. And it's something, though, that but Mr. Backhurst, when he comes in next week, and you wouldn't fancy his job, but when he comes in next week, he's going to have to try to reconcile this in some way and so that there is encouragement given back to people. And this word, which has been bandied about much recently, trust, is reinstated. That's going to take some time to rebuild. I don't see that coming overnight. And if there's more power in numbers, if you've seen that people were making a stand on the license fee, it might concentrate minds a little bit more because of the loss of revenue, the massive loss of revenue that would actually entail and mean for RTE. And that could be a more effective approach in block, as it were.
But can I
recommend it? Yep. No, I can't, okay. But I see it happening. I wouldn't be at all surprised. There might be some political angle in it that we've been talking about reducing it until such time as we get over this particular logjam of a situation that we're in now and get the ship back afloat, as it were.
Okay.
At the moment there are a few holes in it, but I don't believe it's going to go down.
Yeah, it's not going to go down, but I would be very confident that my following prediction will pan out to be the case because it's the only path forward. There will be some restructuring of RTE, so at very least it will seem somewhat slimmed down. Whether that's 2FM or the digital output, I don't know. Secondly, the licence fee will be broadened to make some of the money gathered available to independent media, particularly the likes of the News Talk Group and maybe even Highland Radio, I don't know, and maybe even actually extended out to newspapers to some extent. And then it will be taken under revenue. And it will be, like has been proposed, it will be fast-tracked that the money RTE gets is maintained, but there will also be a slice of the pie for other sectors of the media. That is the only way I can see, Seamus, that this can be resolved. Because the conversation about will you or won't you, if you cut €50 off the licence fee, you're going to be dropping RTE revenue down €60 million. They already can't break even. They're already at a great loss. They've got debts of 90, 100 million. So a complete and very quick restructuring, if not, in fact, part of Budget 2024, of how the licence fee is gathered and how it's distributed, that is the only way forward.
Yeah, well, time will tell whether you're right or not, Greg, but it's only been recently that the commission, the man, that's the new commission and regulatory body online media and for broadcasting has been introduced. That's only hot off the press. And there's the chairperson of that, Mr. Godfrey. So he'll no doubt be exercised by that type of comment and view that you're putting forward. But if that happened, what I would be concerned about is the marginal broadcasting shows that have marginal audiences, that they would ultimately pay the price. And I would not be in favour of that at all. And if there was any reduction that was going to have that knock-on effect, I think that should be seriously resisted because that is a very good service.
Yeah, all right. And people say people have wanted to try and reform this for a long time but have struggled to do so for obvious reasons.
You see,
but
you
say
never waste
a good crisis.
To fund them and finance
Understood.
Them. They're the lost leaders.
Yeah,
big time,
yep.
But lost leaders. And they, in my view, have to be maintained and have to be subsidised. And you're going to need a license fee going forward for that.
Yeah, of course, and there will be one. Right, we live half a mile away from a quarry that are blasting regularly. They don't notify those in the local area. Why are they doing this so close to the house? Houses often have cracks, they believe, due to the vibrations, strong and big blasts. Where do we stand on this? Should the Should the council have a role on this? So they're half a mile from a quarry. I remember I used to live next to a quarry and they would always inform you when a blast was about to happen. But anyway, this family say they're not notified and their concerns that these blasts are actually causing damages to their property. What can they do, if anything?
Yeah, it's a very interesting point, Greg. Quarries are established under the planning and development. The latest legislation, I believe, was in 2000, Planning and Development Act 2000. I think it came in 2004, where there was a system of registration set up. So the local authority would have a register for all quarries that are in the area. And they would attach certain conditions to the operations of those. That's my understanding. Now, there is actually legislation, which would be safety, health and welfare legislation, that governs and regulates the management of quarries and controls them. And they would obviously, they stipulate in relation to blasting, etc., and in relation to assessments being done for the purpose of potential damage out in the outlying regions. And obviously to manage what technically might be called seismic waves, which is probably what the caller is hinting at here, that this could damage their property. Now, I'm not an engineer and have no expertise in sound or seismic waves, but under the safety, health and welfare at work, and in particular, the quarries aspect of that, it came in, I think, in 2000 and 2008 or so. That requires the management and control of all activities, including explosives. So the caller, for starters, could probably check with the local authority as to, is this quarry registered? And then what are the terms and conditions under which it can be activated? And is there an operator? It has to be a specific operator appointed. And then there has to be major assessments, risk assessments, etc., and reports prepared before blasting commences. And that all has to be fully documented for every blast. That's my understanding. Now, the knock-on effect as to whether that could cause damage a half a mile away, I'm not in a position to give any opinion on that. But you would be talking about some way of measuring the type of vibrations, as I said, the seismic vibration that could occur as a result of the blast. And obviously that would depend on the extent of the blast. So check with the local authority, the register, and then move it on from there, and to see what documentation there is in relation to the blasting, and as to the fallout, is there a proper assessment done, you know, within the region, as to whether it could cause damage, and then you have to take the matter on from there. You might need some legal help with it. If you're going to get technical, you'll certainly need engineering help.
All right. Is it possible to give a family member a site for building a home and only for the purpose of building a home, i.e. not for resale? Could such a clause be put in on the transfer that if the site isn't built on in the lifetime of the recipient, that it could be returned to the person or family farm who gave it to them initially? So I don't think they want this slipping out of the family or into someone else's hands.
They're actually proposing doing a transfer of a plot for one purpose and for one purpose only. The difficulty with that is whatever you do actually put in, but whenever you do make a transfer, you therefore, at that point, you pass the title on to the receiver for it. And if that party then wanted to build, it'd likely need some type of mortgage, and therefore they have to have it totally freehold without any encumbrances or without any burdens. And that would certainly be a burden that would make it probably not marketable and wouldn't be attractive from the purpose of a lending institution. All that I could suggest, it would be something quirky by putting into the transfer some type of revocation clause, that in the event of it not being put in, you'd have to stipulate a certain period of time. But it may certainly work for the transferor, but for the transferee, it probably would be of very little value, because if that was what they were going forward to, as I said, a financial institution for the purpose of raising funding, I don't think that it would be something that would be attractive for a lender.
Our mortgage was with Danske Bank, which was closed off in the area and now has been sold to Pepper without anyone's consent. Recipient paid off the mortgage in full. How soon should she get the deeds? There was no fee in getting the deeds originally. However, when the new bank rang her and told it was a €30 fee, even when she said on the letters it was free, it was a new thing introduced in June. They said it must be paid. Is this correct?
Well, whether it applies to Pepper, whether it applies to any of the financial institutions, there are usually two standard ways of dealing with these type of situations. Whenever the mortgage is paid off, a formal discharge can issue, like if it was a local authority loan on it, a discharge would issue. And then usually the individual would have their solicitor then proceed to register that in the PRA in order that it's removed from the title. Otherwise, it's still on their title. So that's the point, and it should be removed once it's paid off. Now, on that alone, there would be a charge, there'd be a PRA charge, which is an outlay charge of somewhere around €40, I think it is, or thereabouts. So that would be a fee payable to the land registry to remove it. Now, if it's an e-discharge, that's usually done by the financial institution themselves, whether or any of the banks, and they would send that into the land registry, and therefore that fee would therefore be that any fee that would be attributed to it would be paid by them. The fee that the caller may be referring to is some type of handling, some scrivenery fee, some search fee, where they have to document the title and send it out, and obviously that all uses up time. I don't think it's exorbitant. I think it's worthwhile in order to have your title free from the mortgage and have it registered. And at that cost, certainly if you're coming along to a solicitor to do it, it's going to exceed that, I believe.
Can someone claim for whiplash if an accident happened 3 years ago? It was side impact coming out of a parking space, no speed involved. Could Seamus please clarify?
Well, what they haven't mentioned there, Greg, which is very pertinent, as to when the case or has the case started at all, if it hasn't started and it's 3 years beyond the injury being sustained, there could be met with what's called a defence of the statute of limitations, because the period is 2 years from the time of the injury to the time of the accident. So you have to bear that in mind. And now under the PIAB situation, Personal Injury Board, you have to have your claim lodged with the Personal Injury Board within the 2 years. Now, there are certain exceptions to that. That's why I'm saying it's not clear. Like, the case could be ongoing for 3 years, and there'd be nothing unusual about that at all. But if they haven't actually made the claim and haven't lodged it with PIAB, they could very well be out of time. But there are exceptions, and there are a number of exceptions. But one of them, which came in under the Civil Liability Act, was the date of knowledge of the injury. So if, for example, you weren't aware that you sustained the injury or didn't become aware of it, that was the cause of the injury until a lot later, that would extend the 2 year period out. There'd also be cases where if it was a child, an infant, the statute of limitations wouldn't run against them until they're 18. So technically they could still pursue that up to their 18, after they're 18. But in the meantime, a family member, like a consent of next friend, could actually pursue it on their behalf. But if they don't do so, on the child reaching their majority, that could extend the statute of limitations. And then there's cases such as industrial accident, industrial diseases, one like asbestos and stuff, which may have happened 30 years ago, and you've only now become aware of it, and that was actually the cause of your illness. Then again, that would extend the period. But for what they're saying here is a whiplash type injury as a result of an impact, if it hasn't been pursued within the two-year period, then they would be in difficulty. So they would have to check as to whether or not the case has been lodged with PIAB. If it's been lodged with PIAB within that period, the clock stops, and remember that. And then if they issue an authorisation, a further 6 months has to pass before the clock starts again. So that could even lead to the three-year period. But the case would be up and running, and it would be within the statutory period because it's been lodged with PIAB within the 2 years.
Can Seamus tell me how I can get a full legal separation without getting a divorce, without spending too much money?
Well, I think that if you would meet the requirements for the legal separation, and if you've been living apart for over a couple of years, legal separation, I don't think in itself, from a point of view of the law and applying, which would be a judicial separation under the family law legislation, would incur similar type of outlay and similar type of costs than it would if you were going for, let's say, a consent type divorce. So I would look at that. I wouldn't be down to splitting the hairs between, well, will one cost less than the other? Now, maybe they're referring to a separation agreement, which is an entirely different animal, and which can be obviously worked out, negotiated and agreed between the parties and signed off on. And in that situation, that would, so that would, I believe, attract different type of legal fees. So they'd have to talk to their legal representative about that as to what way they want to go forward. But if they're talking about a judicial separation vis-a-vis a divorce, there wouldn't be a lot in it.
All right, last question then. If you feel you've been discriminated by a school as a father in its provision of information to you about your non-custodial child, is making a complaint to the Workplace Relations Commission the best way to ensure that they will undertake fair and equal treatment of you and your child?
I don't know. Does it go that far? The workplace relations, the caller would not have any association with them. They are usually in situations where you're talking about an employer-employee type situation. I think the caller's first port of call in this particular instance would be the Board of Management to bring their reservations to their attention, and then to get them to take it on board and see what course of action they take and exercise whatever appeal system there is within that system. The Work Relations Commission, I don't really see the line into that as to what jurisdiction they would have in it. It's entirely different if it was a teacher situation that had a difficulty with management or difficulty with their terms of employment. Then that would definitely be one that would come under the umbrella of the WRC. But in this one, I don't see the obvious link.
All right, listen, Seamus, thank you very much for your time. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn & Company, with offices in Letterkenny and Remelton, and online as well, Seamus, of course.
We hope so, yeah. Yeah, gunn.ie, Donegal Solicitors.ie.
Have you checked recently?
You should find us. Maybe not this weekend, because we'll be singing and dancing on the banks of the Lennon.
All right, are you looking forward to anything in particular?
Well, I think that they have a couple of great headliners, the Sharon Shannon tonight, and obviously they've the ABBA tribute band with one of my favourites, The Winner Takes It All.
Okay, take care of yourself. Seamus Gunn there. Okay, let's take a quick break. Okay, you're invited to join us for a fundraiser car wash from 1 to 3 o'clock at JT Robbs and Sons Drumore White Cross on the main Lifford to Letterkenny Road. F93R240. Refreshments served in support of Ballylennon Presbyterian Church. So that's today. Go and get your car washed at the fundraiser between 1 and 3 at JT Robbs and Sundramore. Now, a caller says these people should be charged for fraud. It's all taxpayers' money. They're getting paid. It sends a terrible bad message to normal people trying to pay their bills. There's no accountability. They get a wee slap on the wrist and that's all. Well, they have got their own legal counsel and no fraud took place at all, they say. Hi, Greg. Padraig McLaughlin said on your show this morning that many people will be getting close to 100%. What planet is he on? He needs to be called out on this. Well, I was going to interject at that point, but the remarks were not specifically saying many people will. He said some will, or some will get close to it, or some will be able to manage, which is what I've heard from people involved in the microaction group as well. So that's why I didn't interject at that point. But as he was saying that, and then with what came afterwards, I was thinking along the lines of what you were thinking there. But then there was a little bit more a refinement of the comments, I thought, anyway. Sorry if I missed a trick there. All the time spent on RTE, no time given to the massive challenge to our freedom with the WHO pandemic treaty, unelected making decisions about our freedoms. Well, like, I have a pretty good idea. It's not something we're not talking about, by the way. But how broad is the interest in it either as well? A caller says Martin Morrissey is the people's darling and they threw him under the bus by understanding is Renault paid for the car, not the licence holder. Indeed, Patrick, that's exactly what happened. But it was a payment in kind for work he was doing for Renault, though he says that wasn't actually agreed as such. And then there are question marks then, of course, about... You see, the bottom line is, and it's none of my business, if you... it is an income, so he's self-employed. It is an income. The question now is, and I think he's checking into it, what his tax liabilities might be on that. And also, he says that he didn't promote Renault. But if you look at the show he did, he drove around the whole country in that Renault. As I say, I'm not interested in getting into the personalities of it, but the statement does raise more questions than it does answers on the wider scale of things. Is it a big deal for me? No, personally, but... National debt was $226 billion at the start of 2023. Now, halfway to 2023, stands at $236 billion. Surely the taxpayers are entitled to know why it's increased. It's actually come down, I thought. I'll double-check that. Listen, the national debt is the national debt. I'm not saying it doesn't make a difference, but, you know, very few countries actually reduce the national debt. You hope the economy grows so the proportion of debt compared to your gross domestic product makes it seem smaller. It's never going to come down. Not every country's up to their ears in debt. But I thought it actually came down. We wrote down that debt. So I'm going to have to double check that, if I'm not mistaken. All right, so let's take a break.